Good morning. Oh, yeah. Now, okay. Now, Mike. The mic is hot. It is a joy and an honor to be with you all this morning. I'm Lynn Scales, and I'm so excited to get to introduce Dr. Elsie McKee, who's with us today. She is a retired professor from Princeton Seminary, an elder from Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church. But today she comes to us with her primary role as dear friend to Mama Monique and their work together for Women Cradle of Abundance. Dr. McKee grew up in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and she has continued to stay close to her community there. And through that work, she met and has deeply befriended Mama Monique and heard of her story and how she has worked with women to help bring them out of domestic abuse situations, to work with them to gain skills, and to empower both them, their families, and the entire community. In 2021, they published a book, Cradling Abundance, co-written together, that documents Mom Monique's story, and also Dr. McKee gives some context for those of us that are not as familiar with the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Nassau had the opportunity to have a small group with Witherspoon Street last spring read this book and study together. And through that, there were several members of the Mission and Outreach Committee who got to know about the work of Women Cradle of Abundance and the need there to help repair a roof for their center that provides both housing and also housing for the skills that are being taught and the community that is being built there. And so Nassau was able to help provide a grant to repair that roof. And Dr. McKee is going to share a little bit about where that's come, but also generally introduce us to Women Cradle of Abundance this morning. As we welcome Dr. McKee, let's open with prayer. Dear God, we pray that you be with us today, that you would strengthen us, give us wisdom and joy as we go about our learning and our work. And in so doing, you continue to tie us together to people near and far. And we give you thanks for Mama Monique and her work in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and for how Dr. McKee connects us with her and with the work that is empowering women, saving lives, and building community. Amen. Thank you, Dr. McKee.
Twasekidila wabungibe, twasekidila. Thank you very much. Am I speaking clearly enough with this little mic? As at PTS, I tend to wave this around, but that doesn't actually do anything. So thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you, Corey. For inviting me. Thank you to the Mission and Outreach Committee, Arthur I see back there, and others. Thank you, Lynn, for getting us together as a small group. Thank you to my dear small group, Linton small group members. I see several of them from Witherspoon and from Nassau. It was a delight and joy to be able to share my dear friend's story with you, and now I get to share a few more. If I were a little bit taller and a little bit more African looking, I could actually present a Mama Monique better, but you'd have to wash me down with a proper African coloring. So just pretend for right now. I'd like to start by giving just a brief overview about Woman Cradle of Abundance. I know that many of you know something about it, so I'm going to go rather quickly. I tend to talk too rapidly, so if you want me to slow down, wave at me, please. Woman Cradle of Abundance is a little bitty American nonprofit that was founded by PTS-related friends almost 10 years ago. Next February will be 10 years old, including Sherry Osting, whom many of you may remember, who was a member here. When she moved on, I'm happy to say that Dr. Karen Brown is our newest board member. We are very happy to welcome Karen. The object is to support the work done by people in Congo. We don't do the initiating or the agenda. What we do is the responding and some support for enabling them to do it. So our main partner is called Femme Berceau de l'Abondance, which is Woman Cradle of Abundance. If ever you think of starting a nonprofit, don't use the name of your partner. It confuses everybody no end. But anyhow, our name is Woman Cradle of Abundance, translated. I'll say FIBA, the abbreviation in French, to make it easier to hang on to the Congo identification. This was founded by an ecumenical group of women in 1999 as a response to the World Council of Churches Decade of Churches in Solidarity with Women. When they got back from the celebration in Harare at the end of the decade, they said, you know, women in other parts of the world are doing independent things to respond to needs in their community. We're doing a lot of things, but we're doing them through our churches, which are all led by men, and the men have the veto power. So they said, we need to start a little nonprofit for our own leadership purposes. First idea was consciousness raising. The second point was to add practical responses, because as the women came together to find out new ways of thinking, they were not being imposed, but they were given the opportunity to imagine some of the things that are possible differences from the way they had always been reared, obeying their fathers, their husbands, their sons, their pastors. Patriarchy's in the church as well as the society. So the ideas gave them possibilities for thinking, and that meant that they also had practical concerns. Some of them, continuations of what they had done before, helping each other, for example, with better ideas about farming or taking care of your chickens or whatever, but some of them also responding to issues that were caused by their being thrown out by their families because their husbands decided they didn't want an insubordinate wife. So there were various kinds of consequences. But anyhow, this is the little nonprofit that they started, and I want to show you just a few pictures and tell a couple of stories about some of these wonderful women, if I can figure out what I'm doing next. That's Mama Monique. That was actually at Witherspoon a few years ago. This is a group of her friends that I met with in 2011. Some of her colleagues and friends. There's a young girl in the middle, and I'll show you the picture there. This is a young girl, Ephrazi, an orphan who was in a very terrible situation. All of the relatives who had been her caregivers had died, and she was living with relatives who didn't care about her. She was starving. She got TB until one of them finally had conscience to bring her to Mama Monique. Mama Monique took her in, organized medical care for her. People said, wait a minute, you're going to catch TB if you do this. She said, doesn't matter. We've got to take care of her. And so by the time I met her, she was in good health. And here she is, a high school graduate. The secondary school program ends up at what's sort of an AA level around here. And the diploma, state diploma, is the signal of an educated person. So now Ephrazi is a typical teenager, you can tell. Another cute story. This is a visit in 2010. This is a young girl. She's actually a young widow. Her relatives, her in-laws, had brought her to Kinshasa from the area where she had been living with her husband, and then abandoned her and her baby, took the property and left. Here she is in an area where she doesn't speak the language. So she turns up on Mama Monique's doorstep with her baby. And of course, Mama Monique takes her in. She goes to the sewing school. She does very well at it. She goes so good at doing her work as a seamstress that she can pay for finishing her own education, secondary school, getting her diploma. And here is her baby. That's Jessica. Jessica considers Mama Monique and her sister her grandmothers, and she likes to come and visit. And of course, they spoil her. One of the things that the first thing that FIBA, Femme Berceau de l'Abondance Congo, asked us to do was to build them a women's center. Kinshasa is a city of 10 million plus, along with its much smaller sister across the river, Congo Brazzaville, the capital of Brazzaville. It's the second largest French-speaking metropolis in the world after Paris. It's an enormous place, but much less good streets than in Paris, I promise you. It's a nightmare trying to cross it. So getting the land to build a women's center was a real challenge because particularly Indian and Chinese merchants were buying up property, and they wanted it to be close enough to the center of their own activities. So instead of being able to buy a big enough piece of property to build the typical one-story kinds of buildings that they would need to use, they had to go up, which means that it's the only second-story building in this whole area. This is the construction. This was our first big project. You can see through one of the windows to the lower buildings around it. Okay, there it is, pretty much complete. Here is the sewing school, moved in 2018, and this is their sign on the front. All right, what does the Women's Center do? It's the center of the whole program. Until then, they were living out of Mama Monique's backyard, which was rather cramped, as besides the fact that when the rains came, we had to find some kind of roof to put over them and store the sewing machines in her storage room. So this was the building that was going to be the center for all of the work that FEBA does. I've put these under headings of health and hope or joy. Health, what are kinds of things that the least of these need? People on the very margins. Of course, there are a few wealthy people. FEBA is concerned, though, with the 99% that are living on the bottom of society. Many of these people don't have food for every day. They don't make some families, they eat every other day. What they eat is not nourishing. The traditional food, cassava, is pure starch. It may mean that you possibly get your stomach full, but it doesn't actually nourish you. One of the things that the missionary doctors taught them 50 or more years ago now is to mix 1/4 of corn flour in with the cassava flour. That makes a more nutritious diet. One of the things then, though, that they are responding to among the least of the least is medical issues that are caused by gender violence, by domestic violence, by various kinds of attacks on women, and the other forms of violence that come in the shape, for example, of HIV/AIDS. This is a woman, a widow, widowed after her husband, her unfaithful husband, gave her AIDS without telling her. One of the things that the FEBA women do, they've learned how to identify the sores that mark someone as having AIDS, and so they try to talk with people that they see in the community, men as well as women, if they see these marks, and encourage them to go for testing and walk with them, hold their hand through the testing, because many of them are terrified. And then when they've done the testing, if it's positive, they help them with the monthly antiretrovirals, the quarterly tests, checkups, and when possible, any other kinds of things that they need. So this is one of the kinds of, you might say, health issues, has to do with taking in people who've suffered violence of one kind or another. Monique says that they have about 10 at least of these requests every week. We can't house them in the Women's Center. There's just not space. Another thing is food. A lot of people are very much food insecure. Particularly, they help regularly about 10 or 12 elderly women. Basically, most of them are blind. They're destitute. They don't have any families. If you are an elderly widow with no family, you starve to death. There's no Social Security. During the pandemic, they were feeding 200 families. This is a sack of the cassava root pieces that will be pounded up and made into food. I didn't have a picture of the cornfield that goes with it, but that goes along with it. So they were handing out sacks of this and of cornmeal or rice, depending on what was needed at the moment, every 2 or 3 weeks to these families. There are about 1,200 members of FEBA, and they were feeding 200 of them throughout the pandemic. So that's another thing that's housed in the center. This is where everybody comes for help. This is where the food is distributed. But then there's also hope or other activities. One of them then is a monthly gathering. This is the time when they come together for an inspiring sermon, for a time to pray and sing and dance, because no matter how hard their lives are, they are amazingly faithful in prayer and dancing and bringing their joy to God when they gather together. So this is, in case you're wondering, it's not the proper thing to smile in pictures in Congo. So you only get little kids smiling sometimes. So you see most of these women looking very proper. This is one of the monthly gatherings. Here you can see them again. After the gathering, they have the opportunity for several kinds of help. For example, signing up for children to get help at school. Until 2020, when primary school became free, you had to pay for everything. You still have to pay for secondary school. You still have to pay for uniforms and supplies. So they're signing up children. Each of the members of FABA can propose two of her children because there's not enough money for everybody. And then they end up with their uniforms, and the kids don't mind smiling. I love these kids. So you can see them in the New Women's Center, all decked out, ready to go to school. Shoes and uniforms and cahiers, paper. Afterward, there's also the possibility of talking with Monique and other leaders for just ongoing problems. And I love this elderly lady, just, you know, solid, beautiful little old lady talking with Monique. And other kinds of things. Micro savings. It takes money to provide micro loans, and we've tried to do some of that. But micro savings are something that can work for everybody. So each of the women who's coming can bring her 50 cents, her dollar, that she has saved that month, and get it registered in her little blue book. She's saving up a nest egg to be able to start a little business or, regrettably, respond to a medical emergency. This is a visit in 2015, and John and I had brought calcium. So they're also distributing little packets of calcium, because there's nothing that helps these elderly women deal with the loss of bone, marrow, and other things. So they don't have it all the time, but it's there. They also do workshop programs in the Women's Center. This is a workshop. It's actually the last one before COVID hit. And they were studying how women can address their own human rights, how they can speak to power. And what did they use? Two Bible stories, Lot's daughters and Zelophehad's daughters. Now, if you stop and think about the two stories that those bring along, you know Lot's, probably heard about Lot's daughters. I won't go into that one. But Zelophehad's daughters go to Moses and say, you know, our father didn't have any sons, but we should inherit a part of the property that would have come to our fathers. So, and then after their small groups discussion, they report back. Another main thing that the sewing school, the Women's Center houses is the sewing school, because most of the young girls on the bottom level of society have nothing. They're often forced into prostitution to survive. Most of them are illiterate or barely semi-literate. Half of the young girls between 5 and 17 in Congo are illiterate. Think about how you're going to manage your life if you can't read and write. So one of the things that any of the young girls who come to the sewing school learn first is reading and writing. That's Mama Myanda, the teacher. And this is one of my favorite pictures of one of the young girls just beginning to learn to sew. This is actually a picture I took in 2011, I think. But they do all kinds of handwork, and then they learn how to make little skirts and shirts and collars and sleeves, and then they start, you can see on the board behind the drawings of the patterns, there's no made patterns. You have to draw your own and measure whoever you're going to make the thing for, so they learn how to do that. You can just, these are just some pictures. See somebody so happy showing some of the things that they have made. They start with making baby clothes, which don't really have to fit very well, you know, and then toddlers, and then older clothes for older people that fit. Graduation with a state certificate. They have national exams, and the FIBA young women come out at the top all the time. As a matter of fact, they just recently had exams, and they're having their graduation next week. When they did the exams, the last 2 days are practicals, and they have a picture on the wall of all kinds of clothes and things, and they're numbered. The numbers are put in a little hat, and each of the candidates draws a number out of the hat, has 2 days to make that. Nothing in her hands except the piece of material and the sewing machine. And you know, they do so well that the jury members have now taken to making the young women take their measurements so that when the clothes are finished, they have a new suit of clothes. And this time, they didn't even pay for the material. They just walked off with the clothes that the young women had made, that the FIBA had paid for the material. I was most not happy. Graduation, we give them each a hand-turned sewing machine so that they can start their business. And you can see how proud they are. Well-deserved, too. This is one of the graduates from some years ago showing off one of the dresses that she made. This is another thing that's housed in the Women's Center. When we're able to give microloans, they have a workshop to help the women get back into financial literacy thinking. COVID meant that most of the women who were doing their little businesses had nothing left. They were very good about staying home when the government said to. Not too many people died of COVID, but a lot have died of malnutrition. They couldn't eat. If you can't do your little business, you can't eat. And so this woman is stunned. After COVID, FIBA started a micro loan project with money that we had sent, giving each of these older women, $100 to restart her business. Now, we've discovered that that's not enough. The inflation, which is we're finding here, is astronomical in Congo. And most of the women who restarted their businesses are struggling even to still eat, which is very difficult. So this is making bread, the traditional bread out of cassava, which is a very interesting project, because that's one of the things that they can sell. So you can make bread, little donuts, and carry them on the street and feed people. Also some tie-dyeing, making jewelry, various ways for them to support themselves. Before I finish, I want to ask Karen and Beverly, two of our board members, to hold up my favorite creations from the sewing school. These dolls, all of their clothes can be taken off, and put back on. They're made so that children can actually play with them to show off the different styles that the sewing school can make. They're so cute. So we come now to you. Your gift last spring was an incredible gift of shelter for all of these projects. The roof had been severely damaged by torrential rains. Congo has had a very bad experience with the global warming, with the climate change. What used to be rainy season with rains pouring down is now torrents, is now sometimes almost monsoons. People get swept away and drowned because the rains get so bad. Well, because our Women's Center stuck up an extra story, the roof got extra battered. And so your very great generosity means that we have repaired the roof. Not only repaired it, they got up there, the grant was originally to repair it, and we were very grateful, and the grant was somewhat larger than we needed for the repairs. They got up on the roof and discovered that they're going to have to replace the whole thing. Providentially, your grant gave us the whole roof. So look, see how beautiful it is? I think this is a stunning roof. Thank you very much for your new roof. It is a delight on Mama Monique's part to thank you. it's better than it ever was. It's sturdier, it's more attractive. And the students are dry, and the programs are dry, and the sewing machines are dry. So I want to say now, again, thank you, but also I have invited members of the Clinton small group if they would like each to say something about what they discovered about Mama Monique. It's we haven't got a whole lot of time. You've been very patient with my talking, but maybe 2 minutes apiece if people would like to, because I'd love for you to hear from each other, people who have met Mama Monique. Okay? And I'll be happy to take questions too, but I'd like to give you the give voice.
Okay, I'll see. I'm going to go. I'm Barbara Flight. I've been a friend from Witherspoon. Barbara Flight from Witherspoon. I've been a friend of Elsie for more than 30 years in many kinds of ways. I was even at her wedding and I didn't have white hair, so that's how long. But to say a word about Mama Monique, I met her several years ago and have seen her more than one time. Elsie brings her here with her mission and her story for support and also for us to learn about other people. I was a part of the book discussion group this year and the Women Cradle of Abundance. And the thing that I want, there's a lot to say about her. She is an amazing woman, amazing. The thing that I was most taken with, that when she was a child and in the community in which she lived, she managed to attend college. I don't know all the educational stuff, but the thing that really impressed me was the fact that in her home and in her rearing, she had a father, unlike other fathers in the Congo, who loved her, promoted her, and supported her education. And that made the difference for her there. And that really, of all the things, other people will say other things about her, but she was strongly supported by a father who loved her and believed that women could succeed and thrive.
Thank you very much. And they're all strong Presbyterian leaders. I would say she's fourth generation, her children are fifth generation.
I would just add the theme of prayer and how prayerful Mama Monique is, but also how she appreciates and welcomes our prayers as very vital to her well-being and her work. Arthur, is Ellen, do you have anything?
Hi, I'm Sally Zink, and had the good fortune to be part of the small group in reading the book and learning about Mama Monique and her mission. I think in reading the book, she truly has had an amazing life, and to just learn about all of the in the environment that she was in and what she was up against time and time again from not only the society but from the church itself and her involvement in the church for many years and being a part of the leadership as she could, but then would sort of get knocked down again and taken back and she would have to start over again. But really, the different experiences that she had and what she was exposed to, but always being very hopeful and, as Lynn has said, very prayerful in terms of each thing that she would come up against, was really very, very inspiring. And I remember when she was here many years ago, I was on the mission committee then when she was able to meet with us. But, I mean, the joy that she has just comes through. And in learning more about her and everything she went through with her life, it really is very inspiring. I mean, I would recommend the book for people to read to really, you know, makes you think about what little we have had to be up against and how much she has overcome, and the good for so many people that she has brought. So I think it's the joy and the tenacity, but also through prayer. So,
Arthur. Thank you, Sally.
Just very quickly, I think what struck me the most was Mama Monique's commitment to service to others, and really putting those less fortunate ahead of her own interests. She had many opportunities. She was educated. She traveled extensively. She's business savvy. She had many opportunities to do other things, but she decided to stay and help others and inspire others. And I think that's a real inspiration, I think, for all of us, that no matter how bad things are, if you're committed to service and with help of others, including faith, you can accomplish positive things. And it was a real privilege to be part of the small group, but also for Nassau to be able to support the Mom Monique and her colleagues in a small way.
Thank you so much, Arthur. Small group was a joy to me.
Do you want to say anything?
I met Mama Monique several years ago. I was privileged to have her in my home, which was very good. I think of her, a part of her, like Mother Teresa, and then another part, she is fearless. She just stood up against anyone who was really fighting her. She had to fight with people in the church, the women in the church, even her own family members, because they thought that women shouldn't assert themselves. So she fought just about everybody, and I really admire her for that.
Thank you, Bev.
Thank you. I have one more thing, because I always have one more thing. But Mama Monique, in her presence, you feel peace, you feel gentleness. She usually is the most humble person in the room, in spite of all the things that she has done and accomplished. And there's so many. I really recommend that people read this book and to see a life well lived with God and with courage and with love. But if you meet her, if you came in, you would not know if you're looking for Mama Monique because of what she's done and who she is, you would never know it. And that makes her even more special. Thank you.
Thank you, Barb. Others? More questions? Yes.
So a couple of you have referenced the challenges that Mama Monique faced in and from the church in particular in her ministry, and I'm wondering if you could share a little bit more about that, about why she faced such challenges.
Right. Sure. Thank you. Sorry, something's happening over there, but we'll skip it. We'll ignore it. One of the things that Mama Monique was very unusual in that her Presbyterian father had been taught that his daughters were just as important as his sons. She grew up as the oldest daughter in a family of 14. She had one older brother and 10 younger sisters, and then finally a couple little brothers at the end. But people accused her mother of being worthless, her father of having no children. Because she only had girls. She was educated. She was a teacher and a principal in a secondary school, which is a pretty high rank if you live in a society where most people are semi-literate. But she discovered that salaries were not what they were once upon a time, and she couldn't support her family on a teaching salary. She said they just had just mechanized things, and so sometimes the checks were printed 00 instead of the amount you're supposed to get that month, and that month you didn't get paid. Talk about introducing technology in Congo. So she decided she needed to do more work for business. Her father had taught her all kinds of things. She's a talented seamstress in her own right. So she began business, but all this time she was working volunteer in the church. She was helping women start income-generating projects. She was helping them do various kinds of things throughout her church work, as an elder, as the woman leader of her presbytery, and so forth. So in part of the international effort to raise the education level of women in the church, national communities suggested, or sort of instructed, churches to organize their women's work with leaders who had an education. Previously, most of the women from whom she inherited the work in the church had grammar school educations, elementary educations. They only spoke their own local language. It's only if you go to high school that you are taught French, which is the national language. So when they began looking for women in the Presbyterian community who were dedicated to the work, that had the education requisite to be able to speak French, because if they went to international conferences, her predecessor had to take a translator along. There were all kinds of complications. But when she came and was elected to this position, she was younger. She was better educated. In fact, she was better educated than the male pastors, most of whom had only a secondary school education. She had a university education. She worked really well with her predecessor. She was very cooperative. But she was also far more talented than they were anticipating. And so when she would write grants for the PCUSA, for example, Presbytery of East Virginia, for example, gave them a grant for a nutrition program. Unfortunately, the leader of the church at that point thought that the women's work should always give him 10% of whatever money came in for the women. He just sort of scraped off the top, or sometimes more than the top. She stood up to him. This was not what you're supposed to do. When you talk to the pastor, you're supposed to say, "Yes, sir, yes, sir." She says, "I'm in charge of helping the women. It will do women no good at all if I agree to everything that you say." They disputed over the years. She was the director of the women's work for almost 15 years. She was preparing some of her friends and colleagues to be successors. She didn't want the job forever, but the leadership of the church decided to throw her out. She was too successful. She was too uppity. After the partners in the U.S. listened to her, she actually did the projects on budget. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Nobody in Congo does that. Or if she couldn't get it under budget, she explained exactly what was wrong and exactly how much more would be needed and exactly why. Very responsible. So they threw her out. That is the background of it. This was in 2010, and Woman Cradle of Abundance, FEBA, had started in 1999. It was then primarily focused on consciousness raising, on the various kinds of things that women could do to help each other, to understand that they don't have to use the traditional medicine practices that please their husbands if those are detrimental to their own health. They don't have to have sex with their husbands if their husbands are HIV positive. They can say, "Go and get tested," and the husbands will abandon them. So they were doing consciousness-raising things, but they were doing a lot of the practical things through their churches. So Mama Monique, as the director of the Women and Families Department of the Presbyterian Church of Kinshasa, okay, my husband says shut down. Yes. She was doing all of these kinds of things, but under two hats, if we can put it that way. The hat for the consciousness raising was the FEBA, the nonprofit that the women managed. She and her colleagues were working through their churches women's departments to do a lot of the practical things. But when she was thrown out, the women's department collapsed. When we visited in 2010, we went to the women's center that she had built up. It was in practical ruins. She took the women and children whom she had been sheltering in the center, 8 women and 2 children, into her own home. She took the sewing machines into her own home. She in 2010, she started to recreate all of these activities, the practical activities, under her FEBA hat. So in one sense, FEBA has been going on for 30 years. In another sense, it was relaunched in 2010 when she had to completely start over with the practical things. She couldn't use the women's center that she had helped build up. I will say that most of the women followed her. They weren't happy with this situation. And she told them, don't give up on the church because they've treated me this way. Continue to work in the church. The church is not this handful of leaders. Most of the members of the church love and support you. Don't give up on the church. She's never given up on it, in spite of the fact that the leadership tried to make her congregation, she was an elder, tried to excommunicate her from her congregation. And her fellow elders said, I don't think so. So that's leadership. I will say just one final thing. New leadership was elected in 2017, 2018. They are very pleased with what she's done. They would like her to come back and recreate the Women's Center for the church. And she says, I've got a whole lot of work to do for FEBA. Furthermore, what you really want is for me to find all the money to put it back together again so that you don't have to do anything. That's the subtext.
Elsie, thank you for being here today. I think we can go a little bit over time because worship is going to be a bit long this morning. I just wanted to ask you, how did you get to meet her, and how does your own story intersect with hers?
Thank you very much. We were both born in the same province on different sides of the province. Kasai province is quite large. It's where Presbyterians have worked since 1891. My grandparents went to Congo in 1911. My parents went back, my father went back. I was born and grew up there. But we never met as children. Partly we're too far apart, partly we went to different language schools. I went to English language school. She went to Chaluba and French. She actually went to secondary school where my father was born, but that wasn't the school that I went to. So, and then when she went to college, she went to university, which was in Kinshasa. And our main Presbyterian connection is with the Kasai. So I have continued to be in connection with the theological seminary in the Kasai, where my parents taught. I taught there on sabbatical in 95. I've been back and forth multiple times helping with library and scholarships and stuff like that. And that's been my main connection with Congo since I was a grown-up. In 2008, Mama Monique was one of the PCUSA peacemaking visitors. And when I heard that she was coming, I thought, I'd love to meet her. I'd love to talk with her. So I hosted her here at in Princeton. And I started working with her department, women and children, sent some money actually to work on the buildings that were going to house battered women. She was building a new part of the complex. This piece of land the church had had for many, many, many years, and it was much bigger than you could buy in Kinshasa at this point. So she had room to spread out and build. I sent sewing money for sewing machines, things like that. Actually, the last money I sent was in early 2010, and by then she had been thrown out. So it actually ended up talk about Providence being used to pay her ticket to come to the U.S. for the World Alliance of Reformed Churches meeting in 2010, the meeting at which the two international bodies of Reformed people gathered to make what is now the World Communion of Reformed Churches. She had been invited, but the head pastor, the leader of her church, said, "Nothing doing, you're not going." And if he didn't endorse her, she couldn't come. So we said, "That's all right. We will get her an invitation in some other way through the Woman Cradle of Abundance." So the money that I had sent for her building part of that complex ended up paying for her trip to come to the meeting where she was actually celebrated. She wasn't supposed to be there. Church leaders were very upset that she arrived, but other people in the Presbyterian Connection, the World Alliance Connection that she had worked with for years, when she came in, she said, "I'm just a visitor, I'm an observer, I'm not really a delegate." And they said, "Never mind, we're going to write you down as a delegate." Then they said, if they get upset, wanababu, which is a wonderful Chalupa phrase of, that's their problem. So it was really fun to watch the international connections that she had in the Presbyterian Reformed world say, you are a voice we want to hear. So in 2010, in August, my husband and Beth and I were visiting in Congo. We sat on her porch and talked about the set date of her having been thrown out, looked at the things that she was looking after in her house, met the women she had taken in that were supposed to be housed in the new Women's Center rooms, but didn't have them, heard their stories. And I said, I've got to do something. We waited another few months because the World Alliance of Reformed Churches, the World Council of Churches, sent a delegation to Congo to talk with the various parties, because their idea was to mediate. It's an argument within the church, within the Presbyterian family. We don't want to take sides, but we want to enable them to listen to each other. And that was scheduled for December of 2010. And the church leaders said, nothing doing. She has not done what we told her to do. We will not have anything further to do with her. And my understanding is that both the PCUSA and the World Alliance, World Communion, basically said, hey, you can't just take our money to do your projects when you are destroying part of your community. But at that point, I thought, okay, I don't want to get her in trouble, because Louisville did not want to intervene in another partner church, quite rightly. Don't want imperialism. We don't want to tell you what to do and not to do. And so I did not want our Louisville headquarters to get in trouble, to seem to be taking sides. So I said, okay, well, do you mind if we support her, if we start a nonprofit that will work with her? And they said, blessings, go right ahead, as long as it doesn't cause idea that we are interfering in a partner church. And so that's what we've been doing ever since. And it's become my full-time job now that I've retired, 35 to 40 hours a week. I love them. I love them. I'm also pretty tired. I'm learning lots of things I never knew before, QuickBooks, fundraising, various kinds of things. Historian isn't very good at those things. So all I can do is really ask people, please come alongside us.
Yes. I'm sorry, I think we're gonna wrap things up. Elsie, if you wouldn't mind staying back a little so a few people have the opportunity to ask you questions. But thank you so much for joining us today and for your presentation, and thank you for the dedication to your work. If we could give her another round of applause. And yes, sorry.
We've got over here some things, some visual things about the project, and some copies of the book if you're inspired to read it. Thank you. I'll be over there answering any questions.
Yes. Just a plug for next week. I'll be interviewing the family from Afghanistan that our church has been supporting. So we're really looking forward to it and hope you all can join us. Thanks.
I've known Madame Monique, not this as deeply as you do, but I've known you for a long time. We see how much she's accomplished because she makes these plans. The thing that she does that not everybody else does is that she expects the unexpected. So when everything goes wrong, because it does, because it's Congo, that's, I mean, it's kind of, you know, the weather, the politics, all kinds of things get in the way of planning. She builds some margin in that, and she never gives up. That's one thing. The other thing is, if you want an object lesson for why it's really a powerful business and economic move to educate women, look at her effect. That's one person who's done all this stuff. What's she doing now? She's got 40 young women that are now out doing their own thing. And well, I'm under, but I'm just saying the multiplier effect of educating women in Congo will be the thing that saves Congo. It's my opinion.